Hey again, just wanted to drop some quick info for you. The Sex Anne podcast has a Patreon. Click the link in the show notes to head on over to the Patreon page and take a look at the different membership options. One exciting thing I'm offering to exclusive members are handmade pottery gifts made especially for Sex Anne members by My Boo, the owner of Mark Moeller Pottery. So if you want to drink some coffee or tea while listening to the show, check out the Patreon. Okay, back to the episode. Hello, welcome to the Sex Anne podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to have fulfilling sexual relationships with ourselves and others. I am Megan Narvaez, a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Washington, and this is episode number 30. Content warning. As we are talking about mental health and sharing stories often rooted in trauma, some parts of this episode may be difficult to listen to. Please take care of yourself and take a break from the episode if you need to. So, hello, welcome to the Sex Anne podcast. Today we are talking to Danina Avery. So, hi, Danina.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And I'm excited to have you on the show. Before we really get into it, can you introduce yourself to the people who are listening?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so excited to be here. This is really an interesting thing for me to do. It's my first time on a podcast. Like you said, my name is Danina Avery. I live in South Florida, specifically in Broward County. I am a doula, so I do birth and postpartum work. I'm also a childbirth educator and a breastfeeding counselor, but I feel like there's so much more to my job than just those titles. So like I said, I live in South Florida with my husband. His name is Aaron, and I have an almost six-year-old. Her name is Eve, and she's really the reason why I began this entire journey into this business of parenting, motherhood, and creating life.
Okay, so Eve is an important factor in this to talk about, if it's okay to talk a little bit about your daughter.
Absolutely. She is the light of my life.
Before we start talking about your work and the reasons why you're on this podcast, thinking about mental health and thinking about sexuality, how do those things come together for your work?
It really encompasses the entire thing. I think it's probably one of the most important aspects of my job. And that's really interesting because I have this client right now who's a therapist, and I was talking to her about a lot of different things. And I said, I might as well just be a therapist. Having our bodies change so immensely and so intensely, so quickly, not just with becoming pregnant, but then giving birth and then nourishing that life, it takes up so much of ourselves. I don't know if you've seen this picture of like a statue of, it's a dad and it has a lot of little holes. And then you see a child made up of all of those pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think that's literally what parenting is. You take pieces of yourself in a good way. Sacrifice isn't a bad word, but you take pieces of yourself and you create an entire new entity. It's a lot for the body to take, not just physically, but emotionally. During pregnancy, our hormones are fluctuating. And then during childbirth, hormones lead the entire dance of childbirth. And then postpartum, our hormones are trying to shift back to what they were before pregnancy, but they never quite go back to exactly how we were, and neither does our body. So feelings are a huge part of that. And through my work as a doula, I've noticed that a lot of it just includes witnessing someone during this whole process. There's a lot of validating, a lot of experiencing it with somebody else. I really do think it encompasses my entire work. And so it's been really great for me because I come from a family that didn't generally work a lot on their emotions. Mm-hmm. And I find that motherhood and making sure that I have an emotionally healthy child, but also my doula work has really forced me to work on my own mental health. And through the trials and tribulations that I've had, because my life has been far from perfect, I've been able to help my clients go through the same experiences. And so if they're having a tough time postpartum, then I'm able to experience that with them. If they need any external resources, I'm able to give those to them. I'm able to see if there's anything that's outside of the norm. And sometimes someone just needs to vent because motherhood is hard. It was hard before, and now during a pandemic, it's much harder.
Yeah.
Mental health is huge in my line of work, and making sure that we are aware of that and making sure that we are acknowledging it is massive.
Yeah. And thank you for mentioning, especially now during the pandemic, like what this has been. Even myself and in my, like, let's say my Facebook feed or Instagram, like people who are giving birth or have recently given birth during this pandemic, and me just being like so blown away by like the added layer of stress to all of that and what that's probably like for them. I imagine it's really hard, especially even people with young children and having to deal with now navigating how to also be like a co-teacher if they have to do it from school and like all that different stress that that is, and making those sacrifices because now it's affecting maybe their ability to work, to provide finances for the family, or to even just have time for themselves in a way that they had even just a little bit more of before, because now they do have to take care of their kids in a different kind of way.
Yeah, obviously I don't want to generalize, but mostly mothers who are taking on a big chunk of the work, it's been really tough on them. I talk so much about the hormone oxytocin that we produce while we're having sex. We produce it while we're growing our baby. We produce it while we're giving birth, and we produce it while we are breastfeeding. And oxytocin does not flow if your adrenalines are high. So if you're stressed out, if you're anxious, if you're angry, if you're sad, if you're upset, oxytocin doesn't flow. And it really impedes the process. It's big.
I had no idea that it's affected by like one's emotions and like the intensity of stress on that.
Yeah, oxytocin is a very important hormone. And when you have feelings that are opposite to happiness, joy, laughter, then that oxytocin doesn't flow.
Wow. Now I'm thinking of mothers or people who have breasts, to be inclusive of people who are trans or other kinds of identities in parenting. If they're experiencing domestic violence or an abusive relationship, what that means for the baby, or even for just that connection, being able to have that oxytocin in their sex life or in like other parts of hugs and things that wouldn't actually then have any value because it's not producing in the same way.
Oh my gosh. It's so much bigger than people think. It affects every single area of creating human life. And I don't think that we focus enough on it, is not given the attention that it deserves. So yeah, during breastfeeding or chest feeding, if you're not sleeping, if you're stressed out, if you're upset, if you're dehydrated, if you're malnourished, your milk does not produce, it does not flow. And what is a common feeling that we have when we're trying to breastfeed a baby? It's anxiety, because am I making enough? Is the baby getting enough? You already know that this is happening a lot around the United States or the world in general, but it's obstetric violence. So when people are experiencing negativity in the birthing room, when they're experiencing any sort of interventions that they don't like, that they don't consent to, that they don't feel like they're given any options on, then that oxytocin stops flowing. All of these labors that we hear that are stalled in a hospital quite often are caused by the stress or the anxiety that a person is feeling. We're animals at the end of the day, right? So if your body says, I don't feel safe right now, that is not the place where you're going to give birth. Your body shuts down and it literally stops contractions, and it can literally undilate your cervix. So if you were 6 centimeters, you can go backwards. This is a phenomenon that is well known. However, it is not spoken about enough. And so people just don't realize that picking a place where you feel safe during birth is important.
I do at some point want kids, and I do imagine like what my birth experience could possibly be like. And so hearing that from you is actually like really valuable to me. And, you know, again, being able to make those choices, knowing that, like, let's say my birth plan, if and when I do have a child, may not actually work out the way I want it to, but at least being able to know what my options are and know like the benefits of making that choice.
And not to say that all hospitals will allow you to experience trauma or all obstetricians will allow you to experience trauma, but picking the right care provider who makes you feel safe is huge. When I was in college, I was having a lot of anxiety attacks, and mental health was never, ever a priority in my house. Not because it didn't matter or anything, but just because I think that my family for a long time was just kind of in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And when you're in survival mode, when you're just trying to raise children and feed children and keep your household together, there isn't enough space for that.
What did you learn about sex or birth control from your family?
Great question. So I'm not from here. I was born in Argentina and I moved here when I turned 8. And so we had, life here is very different. My mom came from a family that just did not speak about those things. It was a very uncomfortable topic. So in terms of menstruation, you know, whenever I had sex ed, she would say, oh, do you have any questions about what you learned today? And I would say, nope, nothing. And we just talked about this a couple weeks ago. And she said, I would try to reach you and I would try to talk to you about it, but you were like completely shut down against me. It just was not a comfortable thing for me. Up until recently, did not feel comfortable being vulnerable with other people and talking about my own life experiences. But now I'm a lot more comfortable with it. And I'm a lot more open with my mom about all of these things. When I was about 17 years old, she kept asking me, oh, are you guys having relations? I was like, no, mom, that's disgusting. Go away. But we were, right? And she knew we were. I mean, she's not stupid. So then eventually she would just say, oh, so are you guys doing anything? Or, oh, are you guys? And she was like trying to be nice about it. And then it got to the point, I remember this very clearly. She goes to my room. She goes, and if you ever get pregnant, you're keeping that baby and I don't give a crap what you think and I'm going to ground you for the rest of your life. And she like slams the door and I was like, oh, I think it might be time to tell her. But it had only been a few months. I was always very like good girl. I wanted to make sure it was serious. I took that stuff very seriously. And so she said, okay, well, now you need to be responsible. And that means that you need to go to the gynecologist and you need to have your first checkup and you need to get on birth control and he needs to be at the appointment. I was like, oh, okay. So I told him and he told his mom and she said, well, I think that's a great idea. So it was so funny. My mom drove me to the gynecologist and then his mom dropped him off at the office.
Did they meet each other, your mom and his mom?
They already knew each other because she wouldn't let me go anywhere with him. He was only allowed to come to our house, but she realized teenagers have sex and we have to be honest about this. It's a really funny story. So whatever, we went into the gynecologist's office and he was just sitting there super awkward and I got my birth control. I knew nothing about birth control, but at the time my sister, who's 4 years older, she was using the NuvaRing. And so I was like, I'll get that. Zero knowledge about the menstrual cycle. I remember his mom telling him, oh, you need to make sure that you guys know when she's ovulating. And he told me that afterwards. And I'm like, oh, sure. Literally had no clue when I was ovulating. I knew what ovulation was because I learned it in school. I just never knew when that happened in your cycle. My mom was very encouraging about being safe.
And so you mentioned your daughter in this. In what ways did Eve set you on your journey to being a doula?
So my husband, Aaron, and I, we met when we were 16 and 17 years old in high school. And for a lot of different reasons, we got married when I was in my senior year of high school. And he was in his first year of college. And about 2.5 years later or so, when we were both still in school, I became pregnant completely accidentally. And so then she was born when I was 21. It was actually a month after my 21st birthday, so I could not have alcohol for my 21st birthday, which is kind of a bummer. And I was going to therapy because, like I said, I'd been having lots of anxiety attacks at school. We had moved out of our parents' houses. We were, 20 years old, working two jobs, going to school full time. It was so stressful. And then I got pregnant and I just panic attack after panic attack after panic attack. And through my pregnancy, I would go to this therapist who I came to love. And she said, well, I kept telling you that this was going to be a lot. And I kept telling you that pregnancy is a big thing. And I kept telling you that having a baby is a big responsibility. And then after my daughter was born, she was a few months old. And I was just super stressed with being a new mom at 21 years old and knowing nothing. And I got mad at her and I said, you keep telling me that, but it's not like I can get rid of her. I can't give her away. I can't give her back. So I want you to stop saying that, okay? And she said, no, but you don't understand. I'm going to get emotional now, but she said, I wasn't telling you that because I didn't think you could handle it or because it was a bad idea. She said, I kept telling you that because you guys had her for a reason. You needed her.
Wow. What about this brings up so much emotion for you and what she said to you?
At the time, I was struggling with postpartum depression. Mild, not very intense, but just mostly being very overwhelmed. I have like a history of being overwhelmed. Things get stressful in my life and I have a hard time handling them. I didn't really quite understand why this baby had come into my life at 21 years old and had completely derailed my life plans, especially because I was having such a hard time taking care of her. The first few months of being a mom was really tough for me. I felt very alone. I felt very overwhelmed. Like, it was a lot to do. It was a lot to take care of. And it was a huge responsibility. So then at that point, I realized that I needed to change my mindset. A baby wasn't happening to me. A baby was happening for me. And I needed to be able to find a way to grow from it. So at the time, I think she was probably like 2 or 3 months old, and I had become obsessed with anything pregnancy and birth related. And I looked at my doula, who is to this day my best friend, and I told her, I need to do this. Forget becoming a pediatrician, forget PA school, because I was in school for biology. I said, I need to become a doula. And I felt that it was the perfect thing to do with a child. You know, when you have a newborn, you can't go to medical school. I mean, sure, people can figure it out, but the amount of time and energy and thought that I wanted to put into raising my child did not fit medical school. I knew I needed to become a doula. I like desperately craved it. And the name of my business, I don't know if you know, it's Midsummer's Eve Doula Services. Because after I finished my training, I reached out to my doula friends and I said, I need to put her name into this because she's the reason why I'm here. And I'm hoping to be able to set this path for her to cherish the idea of being pregnant and to love the idea of raising children and to not find it hard or as a burden or as something that screws with your life. Without human beings, society mm-hmm. does not continue. And the job that we have as mothers is imperative. We are raising good children. We're preparing children for the next generation. They're going to be the leaders of the world. And it's a big responsibility. So that is how she played a role in my life.
And I love the reframe. And you said that that was your therapist who said that to you, that yeah. being pregnant, having Eve wasn't something that happened to you, something that happened for you. Not that it made yeah. it like perfectly easy, but helped you yeah. to see things so differently.
Yeah, I was able to address mental health in a way that I don't think I ever would have been able to had it not been first my mother-in-law, who's a therapist and who encouraged me to go to therapy and 18 years old. And she said, I'll pay for it. Just go. So she's the best. And my husband, obviously, for having met him, and then my pregnancy for Eve, and for knowing that at the time when I was 20 years old, basically still a teenager, realizing that I did not love the relationship I had with my mom and I didn't want my daughter to feel that way. And I wanted to address that. Why was I feeling that way? And how can I make sure I can be the best parent I can be? And had I not done all that work with that therapist and a few others afterwards, I would have never gotten to this place.
Yeah. I love hearing positive stories about therapy and how like it can be healing.
It's amazing.
I, as a therapist, am biased and believe it is too. My hope is for people who are listening who have never been to therapy or have had negative experiences in the past, because that is unfortunately also something that happens, is to hear yeah. that the right fit makes such a huge difference.
Oh, huge. Yes. And as I've grown in life, I've grown out of therapists, amazing therapists, but I've needed something different, and that's okay too. And I think everybody, even if you have the most perfect, amazing, like least stressful life in the world, you still need therapy because you can benefit. Everybody can benefit from personal growth.
Yeah. So you connected the mental health and the struggles of being a parent so well and like in your own journey. How does this then connect to parents or person who gives birth to the child and their sexuality and how this impacts them?
Wow. Well, it impacts you in every single way you could ever imagine. I think from the least complicated level is that your body changes. Your body stretches to fit this human being inside of you. And things just don't quite go back to the way they were before. I think one interesting part that a lot of people don't know, which I teach in my breastfeeding class, is that before you get pregnant, your breasts are only half developed. So if a person never has a child, or rather never becomes pregnant, their breasts will never be fully developed. The second stage of development for your breasts happen during pregnancy, which is when you grow that breast milk tissue. So all of those milk ducts that go inside, and all of the things that create and collect milk. And by the way, nipples don't have just one hole where the milk comes out of. There's a number of holes.
I've seen videos of it just like shooting out. It's not like a dripping faucet. It's more like a shower head, just like spraying.
Yeah, nipples are literally like a shower head. There's tons and tons of holes. So yeah, that's one way when we talk about like anatomy and physiology, that's one way that your body changes during pregnancy. And your breasts never really truly go back. Even if you do not feed your baby with them, they never go back to the shape and size and elasticity and whatever everything else as they were before. So your belly, obviously, you know, different people experience different things. Some people are able to bounce back better than others, but the elasticity of your stomach, the tightness, if you get diastasis recti, all the abdominal muscles are pulling apart. You release this hormone during pregnancy called relaxin, which opens up your pelvis. It opens up your rib cage. Sometimes it flattens out your feet. And that's why some pregnant women grow in shoe size.
What do you hear about people and their self-esteem when these changes happen? Like, we can do our best to anticipate it, but like actually having it happen is different.
Because your body changes so much, and especially the first few months postpartum, everything is just swollen and it's tender and it's different. You don't feel very sexual. And many times we're given the green light to begin having sex and exercise and all these other things at 6 weeks postpartum. And I got to tell you, like, most people are not ready at 6 weeks postpartum. And I think that it sets kind of like undertone of frustration. Men usually don't really understand, like, no matter how much they learned about it, no matter how much empathy they can have, you don't understand because you don't go through it. If your partner cannot have sex for 6 weeks postpartum, that's 6 weeks that your partner is not able to get that release either. And that's frustrating for them. Yeah. And imagine you go to the doctor and you're terrified because that's usually the only checkup you have postpartum. That's another problem, another story for another day. But you go to your 6 week postpartum appointment and they're like, okay, great. You can go ahead and have sex. But you're absolutely terrified because you just had a watermelon come out of there and maybe you tore, maybe you had stitches. Maybe it's still swollen. Maybe it hurts when you pee. How are you going to put a penis in there? Right? So I think normalizing the idea that most people are not ready at 6 weeks and having the spouse or the partner just back off is really helpful. And then pelvic floor therapy. Most people don't know about that. There's a lot of issues that can happen during the childbirth, whether you have a vaginal or a cesarean birth, that can cause pain with sex. Or maybe if you had a tear and you have that scar tissue, that skin is just not able to stretch out as well in the vaginal opening, and that hurts. So it takes time and most of the time therapy to be able to go back to a pleasurable sex life. And I think that people just don't know about it. I think that especially in the United States, we're so focused about like getting back to your pre-pregnancy everything. Your activities, your energy level, your exercise, your sex life, your this, your that, that we don't realize that it took 9 to 10 months to grow this child. And it's going to take 9 to 10 months for you to be able to get to a point where you're feeling like semi-normal again.
That all makes sense. And I work with couples. I also work with individuals who will talk about their partner and like what's happening. And for those who have had children, like sex is a difficult part of what it means to now like try to get back into things because the person who gave birth in this is maybe experiencing pain or just doesn't feel ready. And like you said, right, there is frustration with the other partner about wanting to have sex and wanting to feel that intimacy and connection and how difficult that is. And now that you're talking about it, I'm also thinking like for people who have had kids, how important it is to ask about vaginal pain and understand if it comes because of the stitching, because like you mentioned, it's not as elastic anymore. It doesn't stretch as much. Yeah. You said that I had like this light bulb of, oh, okay. There's more things to like ask or understand about when I'm doing therapy with clients.
Yeah, because it's not just an emotional aspect. It is also a physical, and they might need to see a pelvic floor therapist. Actually, every person who gives birth needs to see a pelvic floor therapist, first of all. But that person might have very specific issues that can be fixed. And if you find a really good one, in 1 to 3 sessions, you're done. They can help you dissolve that scar tissue, not just from stitches in the perineum, but also from a cesarean scar. And they do not only external, but also internal examinations.
That is great to know. That is like a world that I'm so unfamiliar with, but it sounds like it's a vital resource for people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I have two very specific pelvic floor therapists here in South Florida that I'm thinking about, and I've learned so much from them.
From your experience working with clients, how many people know about this?
So all of my clients know. How many knew about them before I brought them up? Maybe 5 or 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll say like, oh, I'm experiencing this. And I say, have you thought about seeing a pelvic floor therapist? And they're like, what?
I'm sitting here and processing all of this because that definitely changes a lot of stress and grief of just something that can be pretty simple of a treatment.
Oh my gosh, yes. Pain with sex is not normal. Incontinence, so like peeing yourself when you sneeze or you jump, is not normal. Having constipation or too frequent bowel movements are not normal. Your abs moving away from each other, diastasis recti, is not normal. Are they common? Yes. Are they normal? No. Do they need to be treated? Yes. How soon? Immediately.
A little tidbit about me. I realized I should probably go see a pelvic floor therapist. I had a cold and like I would pee a little bit when I was sneezing. And like, I was like, this is weird. Like this never happened to me. But I was just like, whatever. I'm sure it's fine. I'll stop sneezing and then the problem will be resolved. But I'm like, maybe I should go see someone just to see what's going on.
We have that pelvic floor that's kind of like a mesh that's holding up all of our organs, our bladder, our colon, our uterus. And when that is either too loose or too tight, or it can be half and half actually, too loose on one end and too tight on the other, then it's just not holding things in the proper way. Mm-hmm. And our abdominal muscles play a big role in that. Our posture plays a big role in that. And there's this therapist. She shared this video just a couple of weeks ago. It was called To Kegel or Not To Kegel, because I think that the only thing we know about our pelvic floor is that like, oh, you're supposed to do like 100 Kegels a day. And actually, no, for some people, that is quite damaging. Okay. See an expert and they will tell you.
So it sounds like sex and pain and being ready after postpartum are like the more common things that happen for couples. What other things related to sex are important to share and talk about that might be helpful for people listening?
Energy. When you've been mommying all day and you have 1 to 10 children climbing and crawling at you the entire day, all of a sudden your partner gets home and you're just supposed to put on the housewife, the partner hat, the sexual hat. And it's so hard to switch over from one to the other. And this is a thing that I talk about all the time with my clients, with my friends, with everybody. You're exhausted. Physically, mentally, emotionally. And the last thing you want to do is go to the bedroom and spend another hour awake doing physical activity, especially because your hormones are so crazy, especially if you're breastfeeding, actually. So like the hormones, they're very low. And when those are low, they cause vaginal dryness. They're also the hormones that you tend to get during that phase about a week after your period when you're ovulating. That's when you feel the best, you feel your sexiest, and those are not there. So you have to like literally force yourself to get into the mood. And there's also that pressure of like, well, I know that I need to be there for my partner because they also need to have some sort of sexual outlet. Energy is a huge one. And I personally had something called adrenal fatigue after I gave birth from everything crashing down around me, which is very common with your body after you give birth. I was hardly sleeping because obviously I was taking care of a newborn. And so my adrenal fatigue caused me to sleep whenever I had a chance. It was terrible. And this was definitely the topic of a lot of our therapy appointments. The frustration that my husband was feeling as a sexual person with a very high sex drive, I had a hard time keeping up with him. And I felt terribly about it because it was sad for me that I couldn't be there for him in the way that he needed. And it was frustrating for him because, you know, then again, like he was 21 years old. So I had to put even more effort into taking care of my body so that I could fix that. I spoke to a friend, a dear friend. Her name is Cecilia. She's an herbalist and she's been a godsend to me. She gave me suggestion for herbs to take. And I started removing like dairy and try to remove like sugar and grains from my diet. Try to start doing exercise or go out into the sunlight, get some vitamin D. And once I did those things, I definitely started to feel better. Close to 2 years in that I was finally back to sexually what I was before maybe the pregnancy. So it took a while. Now, thank God, we're in a very, very good place. And I'm really happy about that. But pregnancy and childbirth does get in the way of it. Maybe it's just nature's way of saying you need to take a break before you have another baby.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Different factors that are like barriers that seem like different kind of mental and physical strains could be our body just trying to like keep us from doing too much too soon. Our bodies have not caught up to the fact that we now have condoms and other kinds of birth controls to handle that for us. When was the first time you had sex with your husband?
So it was about 3 months into our relationship. It was my first time and I was probably 17. Between 17 and 18, I don't actually remember.
5 years of a different kind of like sexual interactions with him. And then all of a sudden that halted and just changed a lot. And like you said, it takes time to bounce back from that.
Sure. And we need to give ourselves the time and the grace to be able to do that.
Yeah. The adrenal fatigue that you mentioned, is this something that can also happen to bio males?
I think that anatomically, when we have a higher fluctuation of hormones, which is normal because of our menstrual cycle and the pregnancy that we're able to go through, I think we're more likely to experience hormonal imbalances, things like thyroid issues and adrenal gland issues. I think it's most common for women, but I don't know. I know that vitamin B and vitamin D, potassium and sulfur, most people, especially Americans, tend to be very low in. And actually, believe it or not, iron, regardless of the fact that we are the country that consumes the most meat in the world, people tend to be anemic here more than not. Those are things that we tend to have a lot of deficiencies in. And I think we're quick to go to a doctor and get some sort of medication for it. The medications end up having other side effects. Instead of maybe going to a nutritionist, getting a blood work panel, and trying to see what you're deficient in and including those things in your diet or with supplements.
Why are we so low?
I don't think that we are well educated in nutrition. So one of the things that inhibit the absorption of iron is consuming it with dairy. And Americans love their cheese. Also, there's a lot of supplements that you need to take with other things in order for you to absorb it better. There's certain things that you need to take with vitamin A or with vitamin C, because if you don't take it with those things, then your body just doesn't absorb it as well. And there's just a lack of knowledge in nutrition in general.
This is 100% things I love talking about. As a therapist, in some ways, I can be the gatekeeper to other kinds of information. Because when we go to a doctor, we sit in front of someone for maybe 5 minutes. Actually being in front of someone who can help provide his education, that's not really available to us.
I've worked with this amazing nutritionist who actually just had her fourth child and she just moved to Texas, so she left me. But she was really amazing in helping me figure out a lot of these things. I think that I personally just love learning for the sake of learning. And the more I learn, the more I try to share, because I think a lot of these things we just don't know. My health teacher in 10th grade, who I really did not like, tried to teach me all of these things, like what vitamins are water soluble and fat soluble. And it just went straight over my head. Yeah. And I didn't really pay attention to them until it was actually affecting my body. Because, you know, when you're a teenager, you feel invincible. You can eat and drink or not eat and not drink anything in the world. And it doesn't really affect you until you get a little older and your metabolism starts to slow down and your hormones get out of whack. And I really had to start paying attention to my nutrition. And I find that doulas in general, like birth workers, midwives, doulas, childbirth educators, lactation consultants, all these people focus a lot on nutrition and eating well and taking care of your body, your mental health. So I've been exposed to this entire new world that otherwise I might have never known about.
Hearing you talk about it, I realize like I want to also be exposed to this world too. I mean, yes, we can talk about mental health in sessions and focus on what's happening in the mind, but it's important to check in on what's happening to your body as well, because it's all connected. A lot of time, like people have to choose, am I going to prioritize mental health or am I going to prioritize my physical health?
The whole notion of balancing your life, I think, is like an oxymoron in and of itself. Trying to figure out like what baskets you're going to put your eggs into is difficult. We just try to do our best. Today, I'm going to focus on making like good meals, healthy meals for the next 2 to 3 days. And tomorrow I'll focus on cleaning out the clutter in my house because that impacts, you know, your mental health. And the next day I'm going to focus on making sure I schedule my therapy appointment. It's tough.
Yeah. Well, I know we are running out of time for today. And so for this episode, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing all this information. Anyone who listens is just going to have their mind blown with all this stuff that you've provided us. How can people find you, contact you, look you up if they are in Florida and looking for a doula?
In person, I do a lot of work, but because of the pandemic, I've ventured out and started doing online childbirth education and any sort of prenatal or postpartum services that they might need. I even have this service that I offer to clients who are currently pregnant so that we can create a postpartum preparedness plan, which is oftentimes dismissed or just not thought about enough. So I do things in person in South Florida and Broward and Miami, but also online, just private Zoom sessions. My name is Danina Avery. You can find me on Facebook, on Instagram. My handle is Midsummer's Eve Doula Service. So that's actually the name of my business. And I have a business page on Facebook as well. I have a website, midsummerseveDoulaServices.com. So anyway, if they want to email me or contact me, I'm happy to speak to anybody. I love sharing resources. I think that knowledge is really important. And I'm happy to share resources with anybody for free, because when people are learning and they walk away knowing more information than they did before, it makes me happy. So I'm Jewish, very spiritually Jewish as well. I'm Orthodox. There's like three main things that we're supposed to do, three main commandments that we're supposed to follow. Number one is keeping kosher. Number two is keeping the Sabbath. And number three is keeping the laws of family purity is what they're called. It's Tahara Samishbacha. The ways that these rules are made up for the Jewish couple, it really just does so much for intimacy. So much. And there's this word in Hebrew, it's called tichun. It's sort of like your purpose and the light that you're supposed to bring upon the world. And I really feel that my life goal and my purpose here, my tichun, is being able to provide knowledge for other people so that they know that they have choices in every aspect of their life.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you sharing your identity as a Jewish woman as well, and how that all connects to things too. I look forward to connecting with you again. I will definitely follow you on your social media handles and love to learn more from you as you continue in your business.
Totally. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye. Be sure to subscribe to the Sex Ann podcast to get weekly updates on the latest episodes. Also, I would love it if you left a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Tell me and others what you love about the show and even what could be better. All feedback is welcome because it'll help make the show the shits. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.